The funeral was an extravaganza of Bolshevik sentimental kitsch, with burning torches, scarlet velvet curtains, banners hanging all the way from the ceiling, and palm trees. There was a media frenzy, with the press packs snapping their cameras and arc lights illuminating the body as if it was a prop in a neon-lit theatre. The orchestra of the Bolshoi played the funeral marches. It was not only the Nazis who could lay on a brilliant funeral for their fallen knights. Even the colours were the same. Everything was red and black. Stalin had already declared Kirov his closest martyred comrade. The martyr's hometown, Leningrad's Mariinsky Ballet, and hundreds of streets were renamed Kirov. Just as the guards began to screw on the coffin lid, Stalin dramatically stopped them by stepping up to the catafalque. With all eyes on his sorrowful face, he slowly bent down and kissed Kirov's brow. "Goodbye, dear friend. We'll avenge you," Stalin whispered. He was becoming something of a connoisseur of funerals. Since Stalin had declared within a couple of hours of Kirov's death that Zinoviev and his supporters were responsible, it was no surprise that Yeshov and the NKVD arrested a Leningrad center and a Moscow center, lists drawn up by Stalin himself. Nikolaev, interrogated to prove the connection with Zinoviev, admitted a link on the 6th of December. Zinoviev and Kamenev, Lenin's two closest comrades and both ex-Politburo members who had saved Stalin's career in 1925, were arrested. The Politburo were shown the testimonies of the terrorists. Stalin personally ordered Deputy Procurator General Vyshinsky and Ulrich, the hanging judge, to sentence them to death. Everything changed after Kirov's death. Security was massively tightened, at a point when the informality of Stalin's court, with its sense of fun, its bustling ambitious women and scampering children, had seemed more important than ever to comfort the bereaved Vujt. Soon after the assassination, Stalin was walking through the Kremlin with a naval officer, past the security guards who were now posted at 10-yard intervals along the corridors, trained to follow every passerby with their eyes. "Do you notice how they are?" Stalin asked the officer. "You're walking down the corridor and thinking, which one will it be? If it's this one, he'll shoot you in the back after you've turned. If it's that one, he'll shoot you in the face." On the 21st of December, the entourage arrived at Kuntsevo to celebrate Stalin's 55th birthday. The evening took a maudlin turn. Just as the family had thought of Nadia during Kirov's funeral, now, like Banquo, she turned up at this feast, too. Toastmaster Sergo raised a glass for Kirov. "Some bastard killed him, took him away from us." The silence was broken by weeping. Someone drank to Dora Kazan, Andreev's wife, and to her studies at the academy. This reminded Stalin of Nadia, for he stood up and said, "Three times we have talked about the academy. So let us drink to Nadia." Everyone rose with tears running down their faces. One by one, each walked silently round the table and clinked glasses with Stalin, who looked agonized. Anna Redens and Maria Svanitsa kissed him on the cheek. Maria thought Stalin was softer, kinder. Later, Stalin played the disc jockey, putting his favorite records on the gramophone while everyone danced. Then the Caucasians sang laments with their all-powerful choir boy. Afterwards, by way of relaxing after the sadness, Vlasik, the bodyguard, who doubled as court photographer, assembled the guests for a photograph, a remarkable record of Stalin's court before the terror. Even this photograph would cause more rows among the competitive women. At Stalin's feet, smiling at the camera as if she had got the cream, Zhenya Aleluyeva.